John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
Be sure to check out the professor's notes on 710sports.com. The professor's notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5. And joining us is Aaron Wilson, beat writer for the Houston Chronicle on the Houston Texans. And I don't know, Aaron, it seems like the Seahawks have done a lot of good business getting players from the Texans. Certainly it worked out well with Dwayne Brown coming over in the trade. He's had a good season, has been a good leader in the locker room. The trade last year for Jadeveon Clowney was sensational. And now Carlos Hyde comes over for a one-year deal. I'm guessing probably around $2 million. It can get up to $4 million in incentives. And so what is it about Houston that seems to be working so well for Seattle?
Yeah, I think a lot of times when it comes to trades, obviously with Dwayne Brown, you're going from AFC to NFC, they're a logical trade partner. And John Schneider, he's a deal maker. And you think about this one, it's unrestricted free agent. It's a different situation. But, yeah, there has been some migration from Houston to Seattle. And I don't know if it's any particular pattern or trend, but it's happened. And it's been interesting to watch because you think about, you know, the other two situations, they were disgruntled, you know, guys in terms of contracts, Dwayne Brown, Jadeveon Clowney. And now, in some ways, this had to do with contract dispute as well. And I reported it here. They offered him 2 years and $10 million. So he would have made $5 million per year. Never got the detail of how much would have been guaranteed or anything like that. But they came to him, Bill O'Brien, and approached Carlos Hyde after the season. And they wanted to, you know, make him the centerpiece of the running game again. And, you know, Carlos wanted to wait. He wanted to shop the offer. He wanted to look around. And they moved on. And they did the DeAndre Hopkins trade. They picked up David Johnson. But, yeah, he could have very well been back with the Texans making more money. So it was a situation where he didn't feel comfortable making that commitment right then and there. He wanted to see, can I do better? Can there be something, you know, with other offers? Maybe I can get more and that type of thing. And ultimately, he didn't get a lot of interest. And it was a tough year, as always, I think, for veteran running backs. You saw Melvin Gordon. You saw Todd Gurley. Them go to new teams. But, yeah, a lot of guys have trouble. You know, it's like musical chairs. You don't want to, you know, still be standing when the music stops. And I'm glad for him to get to go to Seattle. I think he's a good guy, and he's also a tough, hard-nosed, two-down runner. And what I saw from him last year, you know, he had 55 first-down runs. He was very tough to bring down. He was very durable. He played through a shoulder injury. He's healthy now. He had a labrum surgery. And they went up 1,070 yards. He was, you know, really pivotal to them winning the division. And I think that a lot of good things are ahead for him. He's just 29. He's been someone that when he's in great shape, you see a lot of production from him. And, you know, he had a 58-yard run last year. He had 6 touchdowns. And he had 3 yards of 40 yards or longer. So he's got a little bit of speed in the open field for a big guy. He's a 230-pound hammer, John, that can, you know, get away from people in the open field. He's got some ability to accelerate. I think it's a nice pickup for them. And really, it's fortunate for them if they don't line up with Devontae Freeman. I think this kind of bruising runner fits their offense better.
Yeah, no doubt, because he's a good first and second down back. Why is it he's moved around so much?
I think what you've seen with him, you know, we've had some inconsistency with conditioning. And I look back to some of the teams he's played on. That hasn't been the most stable of franchises. So he's had some bad luck. The 49ers, that would have been fine, but you know, he winds up with Cleveland. And then to go to Jacksonville and bounce around the way he has, you know, for a guy that has a good attitude, I think when he's in a winning culture, it's been tough for him. When he's in a situation where things are a bit dysfunctional, I think it affects him. And he comes from Ohio State. He comes from a winning program, and I think losing bothers him a lot. And if people don't live up to the word and whatever they say his role is going to be in terms of carries, things like that. So he's someone that takes those things, you know, very personally. He's an emotional guy. He's a very good guy. Fit in really well in this locker room. And, yeah, it was, I would say, disappointing for those teammates that couldn't be worked out. But it was also just, as they say, you know, business is business. And Now, for him, it just didn't fit at that moment. And a lot of times, timing is everything. And that timing, you know, with that contract, it just didn't work out. But, yeah, hindsight 2020, he should have been back here.
Yeah, no question. So that's going to be good. I know that you, Jadeveon Clowney's still down in the Houston area. I'm sure you probably try to keep touch. What is going on and why he hasn't countered, and how badly has he handled his negotiations?
Right, yeah, it's been poor. I think that what he would have been better off doing is re-signing with the Seahawks at their highest offer, and he hasn't had a lot of what I would call firm offers. There's been a lot of conversations, Cleveland, Tennessee, the Jets, very briefly Miami. And, you know, for JD, it's the situation where people want to see, is he healthy? And they'd like to have a visit. And they'd like to have a physical. They'd like a lot of information, which unfortunately during the coronavirus pandemic, you can't have those things. You can have it from a third party if you trust that third party. And most people, you know, a little hesitant. I can say he's working really hard with Danny Arnold, his trainer at Plex here in the suburbs of Houston. He's down there. He's working out at a place where Jake Matthews from the Falcons works out. And he's doing a lot of stuff, a lot of position-specific drills. He's in very good shape. His core, everything healed really well. And he's ready. But, yeah, it's been a situation where no one has ever – the highest offer he ever had from the Texans – this is when Brian Gain was running the Texans before he was ousted a year ago – 5 years, $75 million. And that was a big no from him. What he wanted initially at one point was he wanted to be like Khalil Mack. He wanted to be like his contemporaries, guys like Aaron Donald. He's never produced that way as a pass rusher. He's never had that kind of durability. And that's why he's someone that when you think about what you would pay him, you pay him in the middle tier of edge rushers. You know, look at Whitney Merciless. When he's more talented than, and he's younger than, but Whitney's under a $54 million contract that he signed this offseason, you know, in January. You know, it's basically in the middle of their playoff run, 4 years, 54. So he's 16th rated for edge rushers. And in terms of APY, I think for JD, I mean, what he's got to do now is just suck it up and do a one-year prove-it deal with someone. And he's not in a rush. And the reason he's not in a rush, there's no football going on right now. So there's no, he's not missing anything. And I don't think it's the worst situation for him if he can find someone that's willing to do some incentives, sort of per game active, maybe sacks, things like that, maybe some sort of, you know, bridge deal for him to get to the next offseason. But
yeah,
he's a guy that, you know, JD, his career has never really matched up, John, with the talent. He hasn't had the production, and he's extremely talented. You guys saw with Seattle last year when he did against Philadelphia.
Oh, he was fantastic. I mean, and the show, the dedication. I mean, he had the core surgery that he probably could have had in November. He held that off to finish off the season.
Absolutely. I mean, the guy, and you can question some things with him. And, yeah, he's kind of a happy-go-lucky, a bit of a goofy guy, but he's a good guy. And, yeah, he wasn't Bill O'Brien's cup of tea. But that said, when it's game time, I mean, this guy, this, you know, switch clicks on, and he gets after it. And I think he's got every kind of twitchy, intangible things you want from a guy. I mean, he is all over the field. So fast, plays so violently, and he isn't the biggest guy, but he is and it plays big, and he has a lot of functional strength. I don't know how much weight he could lift or anything like that, but he throws around big offensive tackles. This is a rough, tough run stopper, and he's someone you want on your team. And I think he should go back to Seattle. I think that's really ultimately the best spot for him. I think Cleveland's not a good idea. I like Tennessee with Vrabel, who got a lot out of him as his position coach. I think that would work. But for him, it's been disappointing. But I think he's got a good perspective about it. And he's stuck with Bus Cook, his agent, who he briefly fired last year before he went to Seattle. And I think that's a good idea for him to stick with Bus, who's been around a long time, knows how to navigate these, you know, kind of choppy waters. For JD, there's still a real good chance for him to have a good career, but it's got to start happening. And the uncertainty of everything that everyone's experiencing right now, that affects guys, affects him. You know, he needs an offseason, and he needs reps. He needs that. That's something that's important for him. He's got to practice.
No doubt. Where, do you think he'll end up back here or not?
Yeah, I think it's 60-40. He's back with Seattle.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, I'll tell you what, the Texans are an interesting team you cover and do such a great job of doing it. Aaron Wilson, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Of course, you want to listen to the show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by the Dubin Law Group. We come out next with a report card. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the report card with the professor.
And we do this every day. We get to look at the good, the bad, the ugly on the report card. We take the stories, the anecdotes. We take the sounds and the voices. We take the social media comments, and we attach a grade to it. Curtis Rogers does the notebook for us. But before we get to the report card, how do you grade Vince McMahon and his lawyer move to try to then rebuy the XFL, probably to try to get out of paying all the people that they owe?
Give it a D minus minus. It's not a good look, John. He's somebody that kind of operates to, you know, however he feels. He doesn't really take into account the opinions of others when he makes a decision. Now, you know, the judge and all those ruling against him kind of influences his decision to back off on repurchasing the XFL here. But yeah, John, not a good look for Vince. How would you grade him?
I give him an F. I mean, because again, he's trying to, you know, stiff people for money that he owes, and you know, he just does not look good in doing it this way. He looks terrible, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, he looks real bad. John, let's get going on the report card today. Did you catch any of the charity exhibition between Tiger Woods? What'd you think of it?
I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought it was, you know, because I think even in most conditions, they probably wouldn't play through that, but they did. I thought it was entertaining. I thought Peyton Manning was always making some good, smart alecky comments. I thought Tiger looked good. And of course, you know, Mickelson did his usual early choke job that you would expect for him to do. And Tom Brady was all over the place. I mean, I know he was able to put the one in from, you know, plant it in there and get a good shot at Charles Barkley, but I think the thing was fantastic.
Yeah, I thought it was great, too. I didn't catch all of it, but I did catch a good portion of it, and I thought, you know, it was great to see live sports, and yeah, it's golf, but it's, you know, for the biggest athletes in the world, you know, at least for the most popular ones, or at least in American sports. So, yeah, I enjoyed the banter. Peyton Manning, I think, won the comedy award. He was always taking shots at everybody there, including this one on how he would get into Tom Brady's head.
Brady, we were talking, he would have brought Gronkowski, because Gronk does whatever Tom asks him to do. Gronk, go wrestle, take a year off, come play in Tampa with me later, come caddy for me. You know, it's hard to get to him, right? But, you know, so, you know, do you bring Eli? Could do that. You bring Nick Foles? Maybe.
Keep shot.
I was thinking maybe Belichick. Bill Belichick, caddy for me. And just to see how that kind of would have worked.
How are we grading Peyton Manning's techniques on how to get under Tom Brady's skin?
Oh, I thought, I mean, he gets an A. Because he, you know, he, like I said, how he got him the last game that they played against each other, and you know, just all the different shots up and down. I just thought it was fantastic. And I'll tell you what, it's like, I thought Tom was going to be the better golfer, but Peyton was better than him.
Yeah, Peyton, he held his own out there. Tom Brady, though, had the shot of the day, holding that one in from quite a distance. I thought it was a great job. John, it was the most watched golf event in cable TV history. 5.8 million viewers across TBS and TNT. How are we grading the whole exhibition?
Oh, everything gets an A plus, because it was great to watch. It was fun to listen to. It was a live event, and it raised $20 million for good causes in the virus.
Yeah, couldn't ask for anything better in terms of, you know, raising funds, and just it was an entertaining watch too throughout. And I think it kind of gave a glimpse into how networks will broadcast sports during this time of social distancing, because I believe the TV crew there, I think Brian Anderson was on the call for TBS, and Charles Barkley, They were not in the same location, but they did manage to put forth a really good broadcast. Also, John, on the report card today, ESPN announced the ESPYs will go on June 21st, a little bit earlier than they normally have it, because normally they have it around the Major League Baseball All-Star break when all four sports hit the pause button. Well, they've hit the pause button a lot earlier this year, but the hosts, all three of them, have a very big Seattle tie. Russell Wilson, Sue Bird, and U.S. women's soccer star Megan Rapinoe, they will be the co-hosts of this year's ESPY broadcast, which will be done remotely. It'll be done at each of their houses. So, John, how are we grading the emphasis on Seattle athletes this year as the hosts for this year's ESPYs?
Yeah, because, I mean, normally Seattle's kind of, because we're up so far away from everybody else, you kind of get ignored. So I have to give it a B+, A minus, just because it's like, hey, it's good to see that there's recognition. There's some great, great players and great athletes here in this town that can mean so much to everybody.
Yeah, I'm giving it an A, too. Russell, he's hosted award shows in the past. I think he did the Kids' Choice Awards. I don't know how Sue Bird and Megan Rapinoe's hosting abilities are, but I do know that they have tons of personality, so I think they will be great on camera as well. And then finally, John, we've got a little bit of an investigation going on. So during the Last Dance documentary, Michael Jordan said this about Isaiah Thomas being left off the Dream Team in 1992, even though he was well qualified, said that it wasn't totally his decision.
No matter how much I hate him, yeah, I respect his game. Now, it was insinuated that I was asking about him, but I never threw his name in there.
I don't know what went into that process. I met the criteria to be selected, but I wasn't.
Dream Team, based on the environment and the camaraderie that happened on that team, it was best harmony. Would Isaiah made a different feeling on that team? Yes.
Magic Johnson angry.
He's very upset up there.
At that point, Magic and Isaiah had their thing. Bird and Isaiah had their thing. And Scotty, man, it's half the team. They did not want to play with him. Everybody puts it on Michael, because we knew that dislike was out in the open.
They left the bench over 7 9/10 seconds remaining. The Pistons just left.
But there was a lot more to it than that.
You want to attribute it to me? Go ahead, be my guest. But it wasn't me.
Okay, so Michael Jordan says it wasn't him that left Isaiah Thomas off the Dream Team roster. Well, on a podcast entitled The Dream Team Tapes, hosted by legendary NBA writer Jack McCallum, there's an audio recording in 2011 that McCallum has that he played on the podcast today of Michael Jordan specifically saying that he wanted Isaiah Thomas off the roster.
And when they called me to ask me to play, Rob Thompson called me and said, Rob, I want to play with Isaiah Thomas on the team. He assured me, he said, you know what? Chuck that boy, Isaiah. So Isaiah's not going to be a part of the team.
So, John, 9 years have passed between that recording and The Last Dance. Michael Jordan looks like he's changing his story here. How are we grading it?
We have to give him a D. I mean, you know, just, again, I guess, you know, he gets an A for everything because he was so open during this. But again, if you change the story, then you're being a little dishonest in that. So I'm going to give him a D.
Yeah, I'll give him a D as well because MJ, like, there are recordings of you saying this, man. Mm-hmm. You can't just go change your story. And that was, I think, a big sticking point that a lot of people had with The Last Dance is that it was put on by Michael Jordan's production company, so he had final say in everything that went over the air, which may or may not have blinded us to the actual truth on a lot of things. So, you know, an interesting bit of audio there from Jack McCallum about Michael Jordan's feelings towards Isaiah Thomas 9 years ago, really throwing a wrench into the, you know, what we heard during The Last Dance. That is it for the report card, John.
Okay, and of course, be sure to check out the Professor's Notes on 710sports.com. The Professor's Notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5. Coming up next, we're going to get your text questions on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Text us at 710-710, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Lots to sort out after this Memorial Day weekend, because all of a sudden you look around and it looks like there are going to be some live sports. We're able to see live sport with that charity golf tournament that raised $20 million. So text us on the Visi Hard Seltzer text line at 710-710. Curtis, what do we have?
John from the 360, they say, Mr. Clayton, would you bring in Antonio Brown?
No, I wouldn't. And remember, the Antonio Brown thing is way down the line and very doubtful to happen. In fact, I give it a 5% chance to happen. You know, I think that what you'll probably end up seeing is that, you know, Josh Gordon's going to get reinstated. He will sign here. That ends any of the thoughts right now. I mean, certainly what you're looking for is you want to get the best players you possibly can. But then remember, it's like this goes the same way as like the Cam Newton thing. You know, is he going to take less money to come here? And I would imagine he probably wouldn't. So no, I think, you know, the Antonio Brown thing is not a pipe dream. It's something that's just down the line and very doubtful to happen.
Do you think between the Seahawks front office and Russell Wilson, who do you think has more interest in adding him? Is it Russell Wilson?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, John Snyder is going to, you know, listen to any opportunity he can if he can better the team. And so I think there's definite interest there. But again, it's like it's one of those things that, you know, you can talk about, but most likely you can forget about. But, yeah, I think, you know, Russell just wants the best talent there. That's why I think that you can see he's got to be happy with the way this offseason has gone, because they got him a fast receiver in Philip Dorsett, gets him a running back in Carlos Hyde, gets him four offensive linemen, got him Greg Olsen, young tight ends, and all those different things. So I think that they've done the best they can to appease them. Maybe they didn't get big-name stars, but they got good football players.
From the 206, John, they want to know, how much do you think Jalen Ramsey will make in his next contract?
I'd say 16 and a half, maybe as much as 17 or 18 million, because, again, he's going to be the top guy, top dollar, all those different things. And, you know, there's just starting negotiations now. Now, again, one of the things can hold that up is the fact that, you know, the cap could be flat next year, could be less, but there's not going to be anybody in the seats. That's why in any of these contract extensions, you've got to be cautious and slow, just because of the, you know, ramifications. I mean, if you eat up too much money on a player, I mean, you're going to have to let so many other players go.
Do you think the Rams regret that trade, or are they sticking to their guns with Jalen Ramsey?
They're sticking to their guns but what you wonder about it, because remember, they made two trades. I mean, you know, and so much of it was to clear up the cap room that they needed. You know, they got rid of Marcus Peters, who I think, you know, that still would have been a good one to keep. They let Aqib Talib go in a trade to basically just get rid of his contract. But, you know, they've got one cornerback, not two, you know, as opposed to having, you know, Talib and to have Peters. You know, now they've got, you know, Ramsey, who's better than both, and then Troy Hill on the other side.
From the 360, looking at the contract Seattle signed this offseason, do you think they regret how much they paid Jaron Reed?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you got to take care of your own players, and he's one of the better defensive players they have in this team. And so, you know, they would have regretted if they had to go to 13 or 14 million, but for 11 and a half, I think they feel good about it.
From the 206, John, they want to know, over under week 5 before Tua Tagovailoa takes over as Minnesota's starter.
I'd have to say maybe the under, maybe week 3, week 4, depending if they are going to have some preseason games. But at some point, he's got to get in there because he's too valuable to the team.
253 wants to know, with Carson, Hyde, and Penny all healthy, how would you break down the carries for each?
I'd say 16 carries for Carson, 6 or 7 for Hyde, and then certainly you bring in either Travis Homer as a passing downs guy or DJ Dallas as a passing downs guy, and maybe they get 3, 4, or 5.
From the 206, John, if minicamp gets pushed back to June, will there be any time off between that and training camp?
That still can be negotiated, because now, for the first time, they started to mention today that there's a chance that maybe in late June you can have a little bit of a mini camp. Now, again, each state, each city, each area has to approve it. New York was able to approve it, and so there's the chance that that could happen. But, you know, we'll see. You know, at this stage, June 26 is the last time you can have a team activity with players before camp. But now there's, for the first time, there's actually some hope.
from the 425, John. They want to know, do you think Devontae Freeman is serious with his threats of retirement?
No, because he's already come back and corrected that. He's already come back and said that he still wants to play. He just wants to play at his number. Now, he may sit out the season. That is a possibility. But, no, he's now come back and did say that he wants to play football.
From the 425, they want to know, do you think Adrian Peterson plays again for Washington?
Yeah, he just signed a contract, remember, this offseason, and he's the starting running back on the team. So, it's not like he's out there in the streets as a free agent. I mean, he's signed, and he's under a one-year deal, and he's going to play.
He's definitely on their roster. I think that if they cut him, though, they could save a couple million, but I would imagine they've got plans for him because they don't really have any other options there.
No.
Darius Geis, he was a second-round pick a couple years ago, but he has not lived up to hype at all. John, from the 206, they want to know, any new developments in Jamal Adams' negotiations with the Jets?
Yeah, it looks like Dallas is now hot and cold on it. Right now they're in the cold stage, because they're more worried about getting something done with Dak Prescott, and they've got to worry about the cap next year, too. So that's kind of put things on hold. And then secondly, it's pretty evident that the Jets are not going to negotiate now. So what you have is an angry Jamal Adams. And you remember, they're also talking about training Marcus May, the other safety on the other side of him. So it's a mess right now in that situation, but nothing new.
From the 650, they want to know, who are your top candidates for Seattle to sign as the run-stuffing defensive tackle?
I just don't know what Damon Harrison's situation is right now, because he's talked about retirement. He would be, I think, the best option. I don't know what kind of number Marcell Dareus is looking at right now, but those are me the main two options.
From the 360, they want to know, how many tight ends do you see Seattle keeping on the roster?
Good question, because I was just playing around with the roster yesterday, and I'm thinking it's going to be three. I can't see them keeping four, because the reason would be like a Cedric Abue. Abue is a backup tackle who can play some tight end. So I think it can play three, which makes for some interesting decisions. If Will Disley's healthy, which they still anticipate he will be, then that's going to be, keeping Greg Olsen, maybe trying to trade Jacob Hollister, and then have Cody Parkinson as the rookie on trying to learn.
From the 509, John, they want to know, what's the holdup on so many draft picks remaining unsigned?
It's just, there's no urgency. It's not like if for example, they come back and they say, oh, yeah, we are going to go ahead and, start to look at getting the guys in for a mini camp or so, then you'll see it. But there's been 50 that have been signed so far, and, these deals are pretty well all made. You've already got a couple first-rounders that are done. Two is already done. There's just not an urgency right now, but it'll pick up.
And then from the 360, John, they want to know, what do you grade Russell Wilson's MVP chances in 2020?
I'd say, he's going to be in the top group. There's no question about it. But still, it's not going to be easy for him to do it, because he's going to have, guys like Patrick Mahomes with some better stats. And, again, it's hard when you're on a run team to be able to garner it. I mean, he was certainly, a top three or four last year, maybe even number two. But still, the guys, it's a passing league. And so the passing quarterbacks and the passing offenses are going to get the top picks.
That is going to do it for today's text questions, John.
Okay, so coming back here, we'll take our daily dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton,
live from the Alaska Airlines Studios,
streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It is time for our daily dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby. So, David, all of a sudden, here in the sports world, it looks like, after a, rainy Memorial Day weekend, still we're in lockdown, all those different things, that nationwide things are, really perking up. We're able to see the charity event yesterday, which I thought was fantastic, the golf with Tiger Woods and Peyton Manning. We were able to see that the NHL today is making their announcement about how they want to restart their season. That'll be at 1:30. The NBA's trying to finalize a deal with Disney World or Disneyland down in Florida to be able to have basketball. The NFL's now starting to get some open words from the governors that maybe they might even be able to have training camps and a mini camp. So all of a sudden on this Tuesday, what's happening?
Well, John, a lot of excitement, and we haven't heard from the players conclusively on any one of these. So it's movement, but it's one-way movement at this point. But it's what's got to happen for things to open up. So view it as a positive for sure.
Yeah, no question. And I think that's the good thing. And now there all of a sudden is some hope. I guess the question right now here is that what's going to be allowed in the state of Washington and King County? Because, you know, I don't know if phase two is going to start June 1st or not. I tend to think maybe it won't. And that could affect the Seahawks in trying to get back into their building and maybe even get a mini camp.
In King County, they might have another county they can go to in the state of Washington, or there will be somewhere where they'll be able to pull it off. But, you know, I imagine that that's the sort of thing that won't be that difficult to solve. It'll just be a matter of inconvenience for them and probably quite a few other teams that are in similar circumstances, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's going to be the case. But, yeah, it's all of a sudden starting to get interesting on what might go and what might not go. But I think there's some encouragement right now.
Well, it's just, like I said, John, it's not discouraging, but it's all coming from one side. You know, it's get the stuff together, get it in front of the players, see if they agree to it. I mean, that we've talked about this, that there are a lot of extraneous factors that have got to be figured into it, in particular if you're going to be playing. You know, Mike Trout brought up an interesting thing in baseball about a week ago when he talked about, well, if they're talking about playing, I mean, my wife's going to have her first baby, and I want to be there for it. And then do I have to go into quarantine for 14 days? And you know, just little matters like that. I mean, you're going to have staffers, and are they going to be quarantined? All the I's and T's, as you say in contract talk, have got to be dotted and crossed. But movement in the right direction for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. And then the Mariners facility down in Peoria is going to open up for voluntary work starting this week. And then, of course, we're going to see the battle between the baseball players and the owners today. The presentation's there. They got the proposal, the owners presenting it to the players. And now the players have to respond and see what they want to do.
Well, and I heard just, you know, some whispers that this was, It's a step forward. It's not just, you know, like in the old days when they just put their proposal down and say that they made some changes and didn't make some changes, that, you know, they've made some changes and, you know, we'll see if in fact it's enough to move the needle on this thing. Baseball, obviously, in terms of a full season, will be the first one back in July. If they can get things worked out, and we've talked about the terrible blow it would be if baseball can't get it figured out, and I'm hearing that the owner's proposal may be a little more palatable this time around. We shall see, though. I'm not counting my chickens before they come home to roost.
Well, let's talk some golf. Did you get the chance to watch it yesterday?
I watched some of it, sure.
What'd you think?
It was fun. I mean, I was amazed that people were that fascinated by it, but it speaks to the fact that there's not much going on. But, you know, Tom Brady splitting his pants. Charles Barkley getting heckled and heckling. Peyton Manning's saying that he picked Bill Belichick as his caddy. I thought it was great fun. It was a great idea. It's something that they probably should have done earlier, can probably keep doing. And you had a NASCAR race as well that went on for most of the day. You didn't have the Indy 500, which we talked about as being you know, one of the touchstones for Memorial Day. But a lot of sports did go on over the weekend.
Oh, yeah, no question. And I thought that that was so encouraging to be able to, you know, see that, see the event, see how much fun that everybody had. And I thought that wouldn't say that Peyton Manning stole the show, but I think that he won the day because, I mean, he did golf well. I mean, I was amazed how bad Tom Brady was golfing except for his one hole in, because he was all, I mean, he was, I felt like it was me out there golfing, going off to the side. It's like brought back all the memories when I used to be able to golf.
Yeah, you get the sense whenever you see a guy like Brady, you assume that he'd be good at everything, and so many pro athletes are good at golf, but no, he was not, except for that shot was pretty Tom Brady-esque. I think Peyton, you know, illustrated why he's been such a popular spokesman since his during his career and since his career has ended. And you know, on another note, why you know, they want him so badly in the broadcast booth. He's got charisma, and it definitely was a great showcase for him to show it. And I thought Tiger and Phil Mickelson looked good, too. You know, there were no – I'll put it this way, John. Sometimes there's a loser in something like that, someone who doesn't look good, and there were no losers in that one.
No, that's true. Although I did think early on, it's like Mickelson looked terrible. I mean, how about, I don't know if you saw, he caught it early, because again, it was so long as far as how the whole thing went.
Yeah, but, I didn't watch the whole thing. No.
Yeah, but it's like early, I mean, there was one where he actually took a swing right, trying to chip onto the green, and he missed it. I mean, he just got, it went like 3 inches. It was like crazy.
But you also saw, you know, later on, and I noticed it too, when I think they had a short par four, and Mickelson is telling, you know, tells go ahead and, you know, you hit a safe one out there, and no matter what you do, I'm hitting driver, and just, you know, kind of showed what his appeal, why he had such appeal, that he was so eager to hit a driver on a par four, and he did. He had a beautiful shot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, he kind of showed his humanity and always kind of has, and so did Tiger Woods. So, no losers. It was the winners all around, and a great idea, well executed.
No, I thought the whole thing was great. And so now the ratings were phenomenal, a 5.8, topping anything that's ever been put on cable. So I thought that was encouraging.
Well, it just speaks to the fact that there's nothing done. I mean, yeah. it's a direct result of the fact that there's no baseball, there's no playoffs, you know, and it's been this way for a couple of months now, that people are desperate for anything. And that's not to put it down. It was fun to watch. But obviously it doesn't get those kind of numbers if a lot of other stuff's going on.
No, that's true. But it was fun to watch and do all those different things. And now it's a matter that 2 weeks from now, regular golf's going to go. And do you think, you know, golf can win back some of the audience it's lost in the last couple of years?
They can. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how they play it. You know, we've talked about this too. I mean, golf has got a lot of great young stars in it right now. And, you know, a week before they had the Rory McIlroy thing and, you know, he is a good personality, Dustin Johnson. I mean, they've got some good young players and, you know, I don't know if that'll increase access. It'll be easier to hear them. Obviously they won't be playing in front of fans, but, we'll see what they can do. And like I said, I'm curious to see what NASCAR can do with getting audience back, as they're running out event after event after event and having them with no problems, which is a good sign.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Did you watch the NASCAR last night, the racing?
I watched it. Well, that's the long race, too. It's the Coca-Cola 600, so that's a long, long race. Yeah, I watched a couple hours of that also.
Yeah. Did you like it?
Oh, I always liked it. I've always kind of been a closet NASCAR fan. I've been to a couple of races, and I think it's one of those sports that's done great on television. And it's always, for me, it's fun to watch, but you know, and they've been getting the ratings boost as well, just because there's nothing else on.
Mm-hmm. No, that's no question about it. And of course, now it's starting to look like we may start to get all. I'm going to be curious to see how the NHL structures their return, because it looks like they're going to do it. And again, the NBA. Do you like the idea of everybody being in Orlando?
Seems to make the most sense. I mean, it seems to be the safest way to go about it. You know, if you just kind of do it with, yeah, I mean, just the bottom line, yes, I think it makes the most sense, to get something going quickly. You've got the most control if you got everyone in one location. And, that'll be really, I mean, look, watching a NASCAR race with no fans there isn't that odd, because you're watching the racers. Seeing a golf event without a crowd there is different, but not that odd, because there's always wide open spaces. But watching basketball, seeing basketball played without a crowd, if that's what it winds up being, that's going to be different. I mean, that is definitely going to be different, and it's going to feel different, it's going to look different, it's going to sound different. I hope they don't try and do something corny like you know, pump in fake crowd noise, but that's where I'll be very curious to see what the reaction is when and if they're playing and there are no crowds there.
No, and of course, I mean, the one thing we'll miss is being able to see Jack Nicholson, if that's going to be the case. Hey, Dave,
yeah,
Grosby,
or true.
That's our Daily Dose of the Gros with Dave Grosby. David, have a good day, and we'll talk tomorrow.
John, sounds great. Thank you.
Okay, and of course, I'll be back tomorrow at 10. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.